after the first bombs fell on Fort Sumter, the first major battle of the Civil War took place on the outskirts of Manassas, Virginia, July 21, 1861. The Union Army was bent on taking Richmond, and control of the railroad junction in Manassas was a strategic first target. Both the South and the North naively thought the battle would be quick and mild, so much so that more than 250 civilians, including a couple senators, came out from Washington, D.C. in their carriages to watch the battle. The First Battle of Manassas Bull Run resulted in nearly 5,000 casualties and more than 840 deaths. The Union Army, overwhelmed by the rebels, retreated to the safety of Washington, D.C. The bloody, brutal war that would ultimately claim more than 600,000 dead and more than 1 million casualties was on. I'm your host, travel correspondent Tom Wilmer. Please join us on the hallowed grounds of Manassas Bull Run Battlefield as we visit with Park Ranger Gregory Wolf as he shares his insights into the first battle as well as the second battle of Bull Run, Manassas a year later in August 1862. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. Tell us about what is so important about Manassas. Why is it such an iconic shrine?
Well, the Civil War is our nation's most traumatic and significant event. 4 years' time in the 1860s, fratricidal conflict regarding the rights of the federal government vis-a-vis that of various states and the sticky emotional topic of slavery as well. Quite a few individuals are going to be directly impacted by the war. 622,000 Americans soldiers die during the 4 years of fighting. Two of the major battles are fought here within what's now this peaceful park-like preserve in Northern Virginia. Broadly speaking, the armies are going to fight quite a few times in Virginia because Virginia is the frontier of the Confederacy, the furthest north and east state of the collection of southern states calling themselves the Confederacy. And of course, the national capital, Washington, is found right across the Potomac River.
You're talking literally a short drive by horse and buggy to get to D.C.
Yeah, we're just 26 miles west of the national capital. In their time period, using a horse and wagon, you could make the trip in less than a day, sure.
And isn't it true that there were spectators that came out from D.C. to watch the battles?
That's right. The first fight, a one-day affair on July 21 of 1861, was the first major fight of the whole war, and our nation was pretty ignorant and innocent about warfare, and a good number of civilians, somewhere around 200 or 300, traveled outbound from D.C. to witness the fight. They wanted to cheer on the hometown team as they thumped the rebels in their march onto Richmond. There were congressmen and senators among them.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Their first real indication about who wins the fight is when the bloody and demoralized Union Army starts retreating back through their midst, trying to get through them back to D.C.
There were two battles here. You talked about the second one. Why did it happen again at the same location?
Well, the battles occur on slightly different acreage, but the nearby rail junction town of Manassas two times serves as a magnet, drawing armies into the area. Whoever controlled the rail junction had an easy transportation corridor in three directions, and whoever didn't control it wanted it for the same reason. So two times it brings armies nearby.
So the intent of the battle was for control of the railway.
The first fight, Manassas is a Confederate-controlled place, and Union soldiers are seeking to seize it in their campaign onto Richmond. They were thwarted. They were stopped here, 5 miles north of the town, in what's now the park. The second battle, the roles are reversed. It's actually a Union-controlled supply depot while they were campaigning deeper, further to the south and west, into Virginia, from the perspective of their base camp of D.C. However, the Confederates made a bold raid around the Union Army's positions to sack and pillage their supply base. They struck the sensitive nerve of the Union Army, and it worked like a charm. It extracted the Union forces from a pretty strong position on the banks of the Rappahannock River. And then they spread themselves out all over the map, trying to converge upon the Confederates. And the Confederates baited them into attacking them here on the acreage where they had their first major success of the war.
Let's say that you and your wife had a farm a quarter mile from here or from Manassas, and you're a Southerner and a Southern sympathizer. During the period of Union occupation, was there a move to move people out, or how did they control their enemy in their midst?
quite a few Virginia civilians are going to voluntarily leave the area. They're going to live as refugees somewhere else to get away from armies, not just the Union guys, but also even their own, because the Confederate soldiers are seizing local foodstuffs and fence rails. They're living off the land as well. The farmers generally grew enough food to feed their own mouths, and they sell the remainder to buy other things. They don't grow enough to feed 50,000 more mouths. So a lot of civilians, after the first major fight in their backyard here, they choose to leave the area because the Confederates win the fight and they continue to camp out in the area for the next 8 or 9 months. So by the time of the second battle, this area would look kind of like a moonscape. The forests had been cut down for use as firewood during that first winter of the war. A lot of abandoned and damaged homes, the bleached bones of horses and oxen and cows and pigs, hastily buried soldier graves as well from the first battle, which were recognizable for the soldiers in this area for the second fight 13 months later.
Over my shoulder, there's a statue, a very large, tall statue, bronze.
Yeah, one of the most impressive monuments in the park is a big equestrian statue of a Virginian named Thomas Jonathan Jackson, who earns his famous nickname of Stonewall on Henry Hill during the first battle. Prior to this day, he's known by his birth name, Thomas, but for all of us today, we know him forever after as Stonewall, and this is where that happens.
This is where he became Stonewall, by holding his line?
Right. He gets the nickname courtesy of a colleague from South Carolina, a brigadier general with the name Barnard B. However, B received some bullets here on this hilltop this afternoon, and he dies the next day. So he didn't live long enough to confirm or deny the gossip and stories spreading through his army about what he supposedly said or even what he meant. When Jackson becomes a heroic figure in Confederate annals through his exploits here and on other battlefields, a lot of people tried to vicariously link themselves to greatness, claiming that they heard him say what he said, but darn it, they all provide slightly different versions, so we'll never pin it down exactly. The heroic versions of what he said win out, however, because the Confederacy was an infant country. It had been around for a few months' time, trying to achieve independence from the United States. And part of that effort, the government, the public, need heroic figures for the public to continue to rally around. So Stonewall Jackson becomes one of the first Confederate heroes of the war through his firm stand, his defensive line here on Henry Hill. And then his guys also turn the tables here. They make the first of the Confederate advances to capture the Union artillery pieces that were brought up here by the Northern Army.
Artillery pieces right in front of us, are they Union artillery?
Right. Directly north of the visitor center, there's a line of six black iron guns called 10-pounder Parrot rifles. And this represents the Union Army's position of the afternoon of the first battle.
Are these authentic or are these replica?
Four out of six of them do date back to the war. Two of them are modern replicas in order to fill out the total number that the battery had here. We can't say for certain that any of the gun tubes here were here. However, with date stamps of 1861 or earlier or 1862 on them, it's a good bet that they saw service on quite a few battlefields.
In the middle distance, there is a beautiful, iconic farmhouse and then an obelisk next to it. Tell us what that represents and why that's here.
The house that's here now is the 1870 replacement Henry House for the home that stood here in the midst of the first battle. The earlier home was heavily riddled by projectiles on July 21, 1861, and then it was picked apart and used as firewood by Confederates in that first winter of the war. The 85-year-old woman who lived in the earlier home was an accidental casualty during the battle.
So she stayed in her home during the battle.
A son of hers came rushing to her house from his, and he urged her to be physically removed from the area when the armies were starting to shoot at each other less than a mile away from here. Well, an 85-year-old can't run away on her own. She couldn't even walk. She had a bad knee. So in the heat of the moment, their decision was to drag her away on the mattress. Well, that's not an easy way to move somebody, nor is it a fun way to travel, and old ladies tend to be stubborn people. So they made it a few hundred yards away, and then because of her complaining and their muscles complaining, they decided to turn back around and head back to the house. They hope and they pray the battle will go somewhere else, move in a different direction, but instead it migrates right towards her farm, which becomes the eye of the man-made storm throughout the afternoon. Some of these Union artillery pieces fired towards the house because there were some Confederate soldiers in the vicinity of the house who were shooting back at the cannoneers and their horses. The Union artillery guys, they don't know that there's also an old lady inside the house. So the house that's here now isn't a witness to the battle, but it serves as a tool to discuss the costs of war, because it's more than just loss of life, there's also property damage, billions of dollars worth, all types, all over the whole country. The obelisk in the backyard is a brownstone monument built by Union soldiers here in the spring and summer of 1865. It's one of the earliest Civil War monuments in the whole country. From that perspective, that time period, the Union forces have just won the war. Robert E. Lee surrenders to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox Courthouse on April 9 of 1865. For the folks in D.C., the brand new president, Andrew Johnson, mind you, because Abraham Lincoln had been assassinated a few days later, they want to decorate the backyard battlefield of what has become a successful war. So even though the Union Army didn't win this battle, they build a brownstone obelisk monument here to commemorate the Union dead.
You talk about Bull Run and you talk about Manassas. Same but different, and one's a southern, one's a northern. Tell us about how you wind up with two names.
Right. Bull Run and Manassas are two names for the very same thing. The Confederate soldiers named each of the battles Manassas after that nearby rail junction town. In the first battle, it's what was important to them. It's what they were defending. The Union soldiers use a different name. They call the fights Bull Run after the nearby water feature coursing through the local landscape. They don't see Manassas. They never made it to Manassas. They saw Bull Run twice, once in their advance into Prince William County and once again in their retreat back towards D.C.
After the second battle of Bull Run, what happened here? Would it just return to basically a non-combatant, peaceful area for the duration of the Civil War?
Yeah, it's a Union-controlled region. There are Confederate guerrillas operating in the area, a few dozen or a few hundred guys total. But almost every other day of the war, beyond the Second Battle of Manassas when the Confederates raid the rail junction, the town and the nearby area is a Union-controlled area. Mind you that the local civilians still remaining, the majority of them are of Confederate sympathies, but they're smart enough to keep their lips shut when Union soldiers are in their backyards. The park has existed since 1940.
You've learned a lot. What is most touching and most close to your heart?
I like the monuments. I like the reminders left for us by veterans or sometimes their descendants regarding what happened here. To me, they're pieces of art, national treasures. The landscape itself, the field and forest pattern, can speak to you when you've read some about the battle and you understand the names applied to the features. We're also lucky enough to have three homes that date to the time of the battles. And one of them, the stone house at the road junction in the middle of the park, is a pretty prominent structure. And nicks and chips in the exterior stonework, some of them are presumably due to the projectiles flying through the air. So that's a special spot as well.
As we're standing here on the battlefield, there's almost an eerie, timeless sense. If you take away the cars going by in the background, this could be 100 and some years ago.
Right. One of the intentions of the park is to enable people today to experience the landscape the same way the soldiers saw it when they were here. So the field and forest pattern is representative of 1860s America. Yeah, you hear the occasional airplane going overhead to Dulles, which is just 15 miles from here, and there's the modern vehicles using the roadways. But if you get out into the corners of the park, far removed from the roads, you can really escape all the trappings of modern humanity. And one of the benefits of this type of landscape is not just so you can see it as the soldiers saw it, but it also eases your ability to think and reflect about why the park is here instead of just additional homes or commercial malls and what have you.
Mm-hmm. For further information, where are you located and how would somebody get here if they came to Washington, D.C. or the area?
If you're using a GPS device of some type, the mailing address of the visitor center is 6511 Sudley Road, S-U-D-L-E-Y, Manassas, Virginia, 20109.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to.
If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.